Good morning and welcome to Valley View, the public affairs show where we take the time to spotlight local nonprofit organizations who are doing great things to make a difference in our community. And today we're joined by Christian Kirby. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, of course. I'm really glad to have you here. So can you tell me a little bit about the Turlock Gospel Mission?
Yeah. So the Turlock Gospel Mission is in its 11th year. It's a Christian social services organization that serves the needs of the poor, the hungry, the homeless in Turlock and in the surrounding communities.
Right on. How many of those years have you been a part of the mission?
I've just been fortunate enough to be here in Turlock for the last 2 years. In fact, my work anniversary is July 15th, so we're just past the two-year mark.
Right on. Well, congratulations. So what was the vision of the Turlock Gospel Mission when it was founded?
The vision for the Turlock Gospel Mission at founding was to alleviate the suffering of the folks that were experiencing homelessness in the Turlock city area, to do some feeding, you know, to feed meals, and to provide shelter. Initially, the vision was to provide shelter to women and children.
Interesting. So why those two groups specifically?
Well, so there's another organization in Turlock that had started a men's shelter, and it actually, the process of creation for Turlock Gospel Mission, there were some large groups in the city, groups of pastors, groups of city officials, et cetera, that were meeting about how to bring some services to the folks that were experiencing homelessness in Turlock. Mm-hmm. And so another group kind of got started about the same time and had started a men's shelter. So after the men had a place to stay, Turlock Gospel Mission began to focus on how to solve that issue for women and children.
Fantastic. So can you tell me a little bit about the women's program you guys have?
Yeah, so our program, again, has been the shelter piece of it has been operating for about 10 years, but it was rotating shelter. So we were meeting or we were housing folks at churches. Mm-hmm. We would spend a week at a church, and we would do that throughout the winter. And so, in fact, we had 35 churches that were volunteering their space. Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And so in December, we'd been building a shelter, a permanent shelter. It's actually Turlock's first year-round open shelter. Wow. And we've been working on it for a few years. And so we just finished it remarkably and fantastically. We've just finished the construction in December of last year. So we opened, I believe, the 28th of December, and we've been housing around 40 to 45, 50 women and children since the end of December. And actually in July, the beginning of July, we just launched our recovery program for women and children, which really, the goal of it really is to help the clients that we have, the guests that we have, overcome the barriers of addiction, domestic violence. There's some what we call spiritual formation or Christian discipleship programming and vocational training involved.
So it seems like you're trying to do more than just give them a place to sleep. You know, you're trying to do more about building towards their future and getting them beyond the place where they're at.
Yes, sir. I think that, the vision of the Turlock Gospel Mission, the current vision statement says to end homelessness through the restoration of relationships. And, you know, we believe that at the Turlock Gospel Mission, we believe that homelessness and related issues are generally not resource issues in the sense that, you know, we live in a wealthy country. We live in a county and a city where there are lots of jobs. Mm-hmm. There's not a tremendous amount of housing available, but there are lots of other resources. Mm-hmm. Generally, we find that when people find themselves homeless, the underlying causation is a mental health, a chemical addiction, some other sort of barriers that tend to put great strain on relationships. And after you've sort of exhausted you know, family resources, friend resources of like, hey, can I stay on your couch or can I live in your basement? And you know, through some of the other sort of behavior that surrounds, either significant untreated behavioral health or chemical addiction, eventually folks just find themselves on the street.
Right.
And so, you know, for us, we realize that if we're going to help people be restored to society, re-engage society, find housing, find employment, and begin to sort of live out kind of the, for lack of a better way to say it at this point, kind of the American dream,
right.
Then we need to be able to resolve some of that underlying causation.
Absolutely. I think that we have some misconceptions about homelessness here. I think it's because we see it so often, and we tend to just think that, you know, these people are here because of the choices they made. Sometimes people just kind of harden their hearts towards them. They think, if I give them money, they're just going to use it to buy more drugs and make their issues worse. Mm-hmm. So what would you say to those people?
Well, I think that first I would say that it's probably not a great idea to give cash to somebody who's panhandling or somebody that you mm-hmm. perceive as homeless. I mean, I think if they need a resource, and there are resources available both throughout the county, both here in Modesto and in Turlock. But if they need those resources, if they need food, if they need shelter, there are places that provide those kinds of resources. And so I would say, and this is not a self-serving statement, even though I do run a shelter or an organization that serves homeless people, I would say that your money is better spent, more effectively spent in supporting an organization that's trying to address the underlying causes of homelessness.
I think that makes a lot of sense, because when you're donating to an organization like that, you know where your money's going. When you give it just to someone panhandling, once you hand it off, I mean, that's the end of it. You don't know what they do with that. I mean, maybe they really do need to buy a meal, or maybe they're just trying to get their next fix. But when you donate to someplace like the Turlock Gospel Mission, you know that's going towards essentials for people who really need it.
Yeah. And the truth is, I think that both of those needs exist, right? So
right.
A person that's panhandling probably needs a meal mm-hmm. and probably needs a fix. Mm-hmm. And so in essence, what we're doing is creating a sort of moral dilemma or a real sort of resource dilemma when mm-hmm. you have a small resource and you have two great needs, both very physical needs. And, mm-hmm. we're creating a situation that puts people in that conflict of, should I buy drugs or should I buy food? Whereas if you donate to a mission, or if you donate to a shelter or another organization that's doing this kind of work, you know that we're going to use the money to buy food and to provide shelter and other necessary services. Mm-hmm. If it's okay, I just want to go back to your initial question, though, because I think that it was an important one. The idea that people are homeless by choice.
Yeah.
I think that to some degree, that is true. That's a valid belief mm-hmm. in the sense that, and I'll share a really short story about a gentleman that we serve. This is a gentleman, we'll just call him Floyd for the sake of this interview. Sure. Floyd, middle-class guy, hardworking guy, had a job, owned a house, mm-hmm. car, the sort of normal thing, considers himself sort of a social drinker, mm-hmm. was married, had children. His longtime wife, they'd been married for close to 20 years, but had known each other for a long time, mm-hmm. high school sweethearts. She got sick and she died very suddenly.
Wow.
And through that sort of journey of trying to grieve his wife and trying to understand how he could move on without her, began to drink more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And very soon, relationships with the rest of his family began to dissolve because of this anger
right.
and this drinking, and eventually found himself on the street, and so in this case, if you just take a very brief look, is Floyd on the street because of his choices? Yes, he chose to drink. Mm-hmm. He chose to continue to drink more and more, but there was a sort of triggering event that is, if you're in a significant relationship, I think it's easy to sort of empathize.
Mm-hmm.
Man, what would I do? I mean, I'm in a similar relationship. I've been married for a long time. Love my wife
right.
very dearly. Mm-hmm. And I think, as I think about putting myself into that story, man, I even with all the sort of, benefits or all the sort of advantages that we have, I honestly can't say what my path might look like given that mm-hmm. that similar sort of set of circumstances.
Yeah, I think sometimes we take for granted all the resources that we have. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a lot of safety nets around us. We have a lot of options, But who's to say that something like that couldn't come out of the blue and take that all the way? I think it's important to remember that these are people and they all have a unique story and they all have a unique set of circumstances. And I think sometimes we kind of just pool them together and say, they're all drug addicts, you know, they all put themselves in this situation. But he didn't ask for his wife to die, but he was forced to deal with that situation. And maybe he didn't do it the right way, but regardless, that's where he ended up. And so I think it's a reminder that there's Floyds everywhere. We shouldn't take that for granted.
Yes, sir. I think that's right. You know, and I think, the other issue when we think about homelessness, and often, you know, often the folks that are thinking about homelessness are people who are either impacted by some of the surrounding sort of issues with homelessness, or people who may want to support a shelter or some other organization. But one of the things that we have a tendency to do, not just with homelessness, but with all sort of experiences, is we tend to view that circumstance or that experience through our own sort of life experience. And the truth is, you know, in many cases, and in Floyd's case, for example, he had a very similar life to many of us when these situations happen. But we also meet very, very many people whose lives are radically different. I recently heard a story, met this young lady, and she was telling me the story about her childhood and the way that she grew up, multi-generations of alcohol and drug abuse. Mm-hmm. As a child, she was often left alone in her apartment with her brother and sister. Wow. And we're talking about, you know, 3, 4, 5-year-old children.
Right.
For multiple days with no food, with no supervision. Mm-hmm. You know, when this young girl was 14 years old, she was traded to an older man for literally for a box of booze. And
wow.
She grew up, continued to grow up in this relationship with this man. She was first introduced to the church through this abuser. He would, you know, go to church on Sunday and he would look great in front of everybody, but then throughout the rest of the week, he would physically and sexually abuse her.
Unbelievable.
And so this is a lady who for many years had no place to turn. You know, if she was introduced to the church, what she thought was her husband. If she was introduced to paternal and maternal figures, what she thought about is her own parents and their relationship. And so, you know, you see the arc of her life and you begin to see extraordinary drug abuse, extraordinary challenges with prostitution, with just a very, very sad and difficult life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thankfully there was an intervention. She was able to find help. And today she works in Washington, D.C., and she is a speaker around the world, but and she's doing fantastic. Mm-hmm. But she really credits that life change to an organization similar to the Turlock Gospel Mission coming into her life and really sort of taking her by the hand and walking her through each and every step that was required to overcome the barriers of her life. And as you sort of hear her story and as you sort of think about it, it's so radically different than the experience of many of us, many of the folks that are probably listening to the show. It's hard for us to sort of get our brains around, you know, that kind of a life and certainly
right.
The consequences of that.
That's incredible. I mean, we all face challenges in our life, but it's hard to say any of us have experienced that. And I think sometimes we don't truly understand the struggle that these people are going through. So what can people do to help or to get involved with your organization?
Well, that's a funny question. It's not funny in the sense that it's funny in the sense of the answer, I guess. First, I mean, we always, every time you ask that question of somebody that works in a nonprofit, I'm guessing that the first answer is going to be, you know, certainly we need donations. We're
right.
a organization that's funded 100% through private donations.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need the support of your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, we need volunteer support. One of the ways mm-hmm. that we multiply our ability to be effective, we are able to reach more people than we're financially able to, is through Through volunteering, mm-hmm. through people that are willing to come and lend their talents and their time. We've, as I mentioned earlier, we've just recently launched a new program, a restoration program mm-hmm. For women and children. And so we've got need for folks to come and teach anything from a, you know, a Bible lesson to how to write a resume, how to budget your money, how to do just about anything that you think, man, I do that, and I wonder if they would be interested. Mm-hmm. We're probably interested.
Well, it seems like there's an avenue for everybody with varying levels of income or ability to help and get involved with this solution. So if people wanted to get involved with your organization, what would be the best way to get more information?
So they can give us a call at 209-656-1033. Mm-hmm. And if they're interested in making a donation, they can certainly ask for me, Christian Kirby. Or if they're interested in volunteering, we'll certainly connect them to our volunteer staff. Mm-hmm. The other thing they can do is go to our website. Mm-hmm. It's www.turlockgospelmission.org. Mm-hmm. And you'll be able to find some more information about the organization, some information about the staff team, and some stories about the folks that we serve.
Fantastic. I also noticed that you have a Facebook page that you seem to keep up with pretty regularly. I noticed that you have a consistent post, Wishlist Wednesday.
Yes, sir.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so our Wishlist Wednesday is just an opportunity. You know, we've found that there are some folks that love to write a check and you know, send that in. And that's, of course, again, always necessary and needed.
Right.
But we also find there are some folks who would just love to go to the grocery store, or when they're in the grocery store, they'd love to pick up something to bring down to the shelter. And so mm-hmm. what we try to do on Wednesdays is we try to send out a list to our Facebook followers that just says, you know, this week we're in need of bottled water, for example. It's it's been really hot
right.
and really smoky.
Right.
In the area, and so we're in need of bottled water, we're in need of, you know, paper plates, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so the staff weekly sort of, you know, look around and try to decide what is it that we could really use this week, and they send out that list to our followers.
Fantastic. So are these donations tax deductible?
Yes, sir. Every donation to the Turlock Gospel Mission is tax deductible. Any donor should expect to receive a receipt from us, whether it's a receipt for gift in kind, or, you know, donated goods, mm-hmm. or a cash or a monetary donation receipt.
Fantastic. I remember when I was in high school, I had to get a lot of community service hours in just to graduate. So do you think volunteering with the Turlock Gospel Mission would be a good thing for high schoolers looking to do that?
We love high schoolers. Interestingly, we have some groups from Turlock High School and from Pittman High School.
Oh, yeah.
And they come quite often. One of the interesting things that's, you know, sort of going back to that question you asked earlier about causation, about choices, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things that we see in the homeless population is the fastest growing segment of homeless people in this country happen to be children.
Wow.
And you know, I think I can safely say, by and large, most of those kids are not homeless through their own choices or through their
right.
own actions.
Right.
And so I think it's important that high schoolers have the experience of coming and serving those less fortunate. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, one of the things that we're very interested in, the thing that we believe is part of our calling, is to develop empathy in our communities around
right.
People who are less fortunate, people who are poor, people who are hungry. And so I think that there's, first of all, I think that's just such a great life experience. But secondly, I think it helps us to develop some sensitivity in high schools, because it's likely, if you're in high school today, or if you have a student in high school, it's very likely, or in college, unfortunately, it's very likely that you know someone who is experiencing homelessness, whose family is struggling. And so often what we find out is there's that kid that you've noticed hasn't showered much or hasn't
right.
changed clothes. And, you know, naturally in sort of that high school culture, that person becomes sort of a target of ridicule or a target of some teasing. And so I think it's really valuable and powerful for kids to come and work with us and hear about the reality that some of their friends, some of their co-schoolmates, I guess, are experiencing this really sort of crisis situation
mm-hmm.
that they have very or little or no control, or very little
mm-hmm.
or no control over.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's empathy building.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the object of doing community service. I think it's less about the actions that you're doing. It's more about personal growth. It's about humanizing these people in these situations or learning more about yourself. And I think it's so easy to put these people in the other category until you get to know them.
Yes, right.
And then you realize that you're not so different. You just might have more resources than they do. You just might have more privilege than they do. And they're just trying to get by like you are. And I think it's an incredible opportunity for personal growth.
Yeah, I agree with that statement.
Mm-hmm. So I think it fits just the same for adults. I mean, it doesn't have to be just high schoolers. So I think sometimes we can kind of just get a little bitter, a little desensitized to these things, but I don't think it's too late to change and to try to grow yourself. And for those of us who are just joining, we're talking to Christian Kirby of the Turlock Gospel Mission, we're talking about the things they're doing in our community and how we can get involved. Can you give that contact information one more time?
Yes, sir. So you can reach us at the shelter, at the mission, at our phone number is 209-656-1033. You can find us on the web at www.turlockgospelmission.org. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, you can also find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, etc.
Fantastic. Since homelessness is a pretty big issue in the Valley, there are several different organizations trying to make a difference. What do you think sets the Turlock Gospel Mission apart from those other ones?
That's a great question and a loaded question, depending on who the audience is. I think that we're probably similar in many ways to some of the other organizations. I mean, I think certainly, you know, when you begin to talk about the philosophy of the way that we do our work, mm-hmm. I think that's probably maybe the big piece. Mm-hmm. You know, for us, we recognize, as I mentioned earlier, we believe that homelessness is not primarily a resource issue. Mm-hmm. It's a relationship issue. Mm-hmm. And so because of that belief, that's the approach that we take. So there are in our kind of in the sort of American paradigm currently, the federal government and many state and local governments are focused on a solution that they call Housing First. And we don't, it's not that we disagree with Housing First, we just don't believe it's the most effective model, in the sense that Housing First, the precept is that exactly what it sounds like, the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to overcome your need of housing. Mm-hmm. And so we put you in housing. Unfortunately, because of the expense of that model and because of the difficulty that that lies in following those folks and really making sure that they engage the process to overcome some of the underlying barriers that they have. Mm-hmm. Just being in a house doesn't solve many of their issues. In fact, the young lady I was talking about earlier, she tells as part of her story, part of her life, she was given a place to live. She had been homeless and really struggling. She had been given an apartment. And within 6 weeks, she had lost the apartment because of inability to pay the rent, inability to kind of live inside of the contract or the contractual behavior that a tenant would need to live inside of to stay in a house. And so for those reasons, we believe that the first sort of steps we need to take are to address, again, you know, behavioral health, mental health issues, mm-hmm. Domestic violence issues, so relational issues, drug addiction, et cetera. Mm-hmm.
Well, it seems like you're trying to deal with the reasons that put them on the street in the first place. I think it's a good idea to try to get them housing, but if you're just trying to deal with the homelessness part itself, it might not be a permanent solution. It seems like you guys also offer a couple different other services along with the women's program, things like that. Can you talk about the meal ministry and the day center?
Yes, sir. So our day center is really the social service arm or the, you know, sort of outreach arm of Turlock Gospel Mission. It's a place that's safe to come. Mm-hmm. You know, we do a lot of work to make sure that that there's no drug use there, that there's no weapons there. Mm-hmm. So it's a safe place to be. It's a place to be when it's 110 degrees outside. It's cool. We have resources for, you know, meal resources, so you can eat a meal there. Mm-hmm. Actually, you can eat three meals a day there. Wow. You can find food for your pet. You can find a cool place for your pet. We have an area with misting. So when it's really hot, you can find a cool place. Same thing in the winter. When it's cold outside, you can find a warm place. We have folks that you need, if you need somebody to talk to, if you need transportation to a doctor's appointment or a social security appointment, we provide transportation.
Wow.
We provide vouchers to get an identification card. So if you've lost your ID, if you need to, if you're starting to try to make some steps back towards employment or housing, one of those first steps is that you need to have a legal ID. And so we help take care of that. So lots of services at the day center, case management services. We're really working hard to try to make as broad a spectrum of services available to folks as possible there.
Fantastic. What do you see the future of the Turlock Gospel Mission being? Do you want to add any more programs or improve the existing ones you have?
Yeah, so we're hoping that we're always improving towards greater efficiency, greater effectiveness in meeting the needs of the people that we serve. I think that, you know, if we really look into the future, sort of the big steps are we'd like to, maybe in terms of capital, capital projects, we'd like to expand to be able to house men. We're working on a project to remodel that day center that we're talking about. There's some issues, especially with the plumbing and the electrical in that building. So we're working on that. But really everything that we're doing, and you mentioned the meal ministry a minute ago, and I'd like to come back to that in a second, but
yeah,
everything we're doing is really pointed at how can we lead the folks that we're serving to a wholesale life change. That's everything from sort of worldview, belief system to economic life change. How can we lead these folks to a place where they're really free of addiction, free of domestic violence, free of many of the barriers that are holding them back, free of hopefully if there's behavioral health that's been diagnosed and it's being treated, free to re-enter housing, re-enter employment, et cetera. That's really sort of the big job, the big sort of visional view of our future. And so everything that goes along with that, you know, transitional housing, for example, housing, again, is very scarce, especially in Turlock. It's very difficult,
right,
even at market rate, to find a rental. And so we're pursuing some ability to build some transitional housing, low-cost housing for folks that are graduating our programs and need a little bit more support as they enter the economy. Yeah, so that's sort of, I think, the big picture view.
Fantastic. Well, I certainly hope that you get the support you need to make those dreams a reality.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate
absolutely.
That very much.
Absolutely. I just really want to thank you for all your time today, Christian, and for what you guys are doing in our community.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak with you today.
Well, it's been my pleasure, too. Thank you for everyone who's been listening today. Once again, you've been tuned into Valley View, the public affairs show, where you can listen every Sunday morning right here on iHeartRadio. And I've been Luke Swanberg, hoping that you'll join us next week. Thanks again.